This is Again and Again and Again and Again, a Stranger Things fanfic written by Faye and read by Rena Jenkins. This story is rated PG-13 and contains the pairing Billy Hargrove, Steve Harrington, pre-slash-ish, with additional tags for time loop. Technically, there's main character death, but it doesn't stick. Billy Hargrove tries to be a better person. Competent Steve Harrington. Mentions of suicide. Confessions. Stranger Things, Season 2. Author's notes. For the Billy Hargrove bingo, for my learning a new skill square, which I kinda squeezed in there. Monster fighting is a skill? If we could go back to the start, this truck be falling apart. I'm not scared to love you, but I'm scared of breaking my heart. Still breaking my heart. If we go back to the start, you'll still be breaking my heart. If we go back to the start, you'll still be breaking my heart. Love can meet me in the middle. I got lost, still thinking of September. If we could go back to the start. He wakes up by a pounding on his door, like every day. His dad waits outside for him to stumble out of bed and open it, like every day. He looks at Billy with disdain, for sleeping until noon on a Sunday, for the way he looks, for all the ways he is apparently a disappointment of a son, and says, "We're leaving. Get up and make your sister lunch." Like every day. Billy bites his lip. Considers. Is today a start a fight day or a show his belly day? As he only has a couple of seconds to decide before Neil will decide it for him. Fuck it. Billy is tired. He doesn't want to go through the rest of the day with bruised ribs. It sucks. "Yes, sir," he therefore says, and Neil grunts and turns to leave. "We'll be back at 7, Neil throws over his shoulder, and Billy thinks, "No, you won't," because they never are. But he says nothing. Instead, he waits until the front door slams shut. He listens for his dad's car to start and drive away from the house before he collapses back into bed. Glancing at the clock on his bedside table, he sighs. 12:04 p.m., like usual. That means he has 14 minutes of dozing before Max knocks on his door. Exactly 14 minutes later, he blinks awake again at the insistent knocking.
"I'm hungry."
He groans and flips Max off without looking. Hears her turn around with a huff and stomp out into the kitchen, only to start slamming cupboards open as loudly as she can just to annoy him.
It's working, like every day.
Billy is tempted to ignore it. Just stay in bed all day and try to fall back asleep and forget all of this is happening. But he knows that if he does, Max is going to make a mess of the kitchen and leave. And he will either have to clean it all up for her or get a beating for not cleaning it up for her when Neil gets home. Neither of those options are tempting today. So with a great sigh, he heaves himself up from the bed and pulls on a pair of sweatpants. He goes out into the kitchen and shoves Max aside while ignoring her protests and puts a pan on the stove to make her pancakes. He has found, through trial and error, that pancakes seem to yield the least amount of grousing, and he is not in the mood for a fight today. Plus, you know, it's always fun to keep her on her toes by being unexpectedly nice. So while he's cooking, and without turning around, he asks her, "So, got any plans for today?" She huffs, "No," while sounding offended that he even dared to ask. "Why do you care?" He rolls his eyes, knowing that she can see him while he has his back turned. "Because my dad and your mom aren't home, and they left me in charge. So, I'll ask again. Got any plans for today, Maxine?" is what he usually says. Or some variation of it, at least. But that hasn't exactly been working out for him the last couple of times. So he takes a deep breath and schools his voice into something neutral. "So let me know if there's a change of plans or anything, okay?" He makes a face and tacks on, "Or if you need a ride anywhere, or whatever." Whatever. It's an experiment. Steve said something recently about catching more flies with honey than with a fly swatter, and it's worth a shot. Max is silent behind him, while the butter melts and sizzles in the pan. Then she says, okay. Whatever. And sounds confused instead of like she hates him, which he'll call it a win. He pours some batter into the pan and allows himself a small smile. At least until there's a clatter and a crash, and he rolls around to see that Max has dropped her glass of orange juice on the floor, creating a mess of juice and broken glass on the floor. Just like every goddamn day. It is Sunday, November 4th, 1984. And it's been Sunday, November 4th, 1984, like 52 times now. 54? Over 50, at least. Billy's lost count, which is depressing in itself. The first time the day repeated itself, he went through half the day thinking that he had had an unusually vivid dream the night before. Of the exact same day that he was living. Maybe developed some kind of superpower overnight. Or possibly, and more realistically, gotten a concussion. Because he remembered fighting Steve Harrington at the Byers place the night before, and Harrington smashing a plate over his head just before he blacked out, and woke up by Neil pounding on his door. But then, when he'd retraced all his steps from the day before and was feeling increasingly put off about it, Harrington had stepped out onto the porch and looked relieved for a short fraction of a second before he adopted the same serious face as Billy had seen yesterday. And it was the first thing all day that had been different. And Billy was suddenly certain that he wasn't dreaming and that it wasn't a concussion, but he couldn't figure it out. So what he said instead was, "What the fuck is going on?" And Harrington rolled his eyes with his hands on his hips and said, "Yeah, it's me. Don't cream your... What did you say?" And then he stumbled off the porch with narrowed eyes and grabbed Billy by the shoulders, staring at him with wide eyes, looking like he was searching for answers on Billy's face. And Billy didn't even have the presence of mind to shove him away. "Do you remember?" Harrington hissed. "Do you remember yesterday?" "You mean the same fucking day as today?" Billy hissed in reply, and grabbed Harrington by the wrists. To push him off or grab hold and make sure he didn't back away, he didn't know. "Yeah, and I have some goddamn questions!" Which was how he found himself on the Byers porch, with a visibly rattled Steve Harrington talking about time loops, and monsters, and human experimentation, and alternate dimensions. Honestly, at that point he pretty much went back to his concussion theory. But he wasn't sure if he was the concussed one or Steve was, because the things that came out of that guy's mouth was obviously bullshit. Or at least it had seemed to be, until they went inside and found that the kids had snuck out,
and Steve showed him a dead, slimy thing with teeth in the fridge, and then brought him to a hole in the ground that led to tunnels with bad air and full of otherworldly vines, where they caught up to said kids armed with gasoline and matches. They lit some alien hub on fire, ran for their lives, and almost got eaten by a pack of faceless monster dogs. Steve's story seemed like less bullshit after that. Especially after Billy went home, got his ass kicked by his dad for bringing Max home late, and then fell asleep with his body aching, only to wake up on November 4th. Again.
I'm meeting the guys at the arcade. Max sounds hesitant.
She's not actually meeting the guys at the arcade. Billy knows that. But lying is a step up from hiding away in her room and then sneaking out and leaving him behind. So maybe the whole honey thing is working. Man, you can't wait to tell Steve.
Yeah, he says, not pausing in his reps.
Yeah, and you said...
She clams up and worries her lip with her teeth.
He pretends to be fully concentrated on his workout while he waits for her to take the plunge. When she doesn't speak for several seconds, he decides to make it easy for her. Just this once.
So sue him, he's feeling charitable.
He puts his weights down and stands up, stretches his back out until there's a satisfying pop.
I'm going into town soon. Just need to take a shower first.
Want a ride? He drops her off at the arcade. Board in hand, so he knows that she won't stay there, even though she dutifully pretends to walk into the building while he watches her from his car, and heads for the hardware store. He browses the aisles for a while, getting a feeling for the equipment. So far, he's tried the sledgehammer, the crowbar, the shovel, the tire iron, the baseball bat, a golf club, and a tennis racket, in addition to various knives and other stabby weapons like screwdrivers and ice picks. His favorite so far is the axe, though, so that is what he's going for today. Newly purchased axe in hand, he returns to his car, turns on his music, and drums his fingers on the wheel while driving out of town to the diner, where he buys himself two slices of pie. Because every day is cheat day nowadays, and also he's gonna need the energy for later. He then takes the scenic route out to the junkyard, where he finds his little shit of a sister with her nerdy little friends, and Steve, in the barricaded bus, just like he knew he would.
They show up yet, Harrington?
He says, grinning, and grabs the axe in one hand and his jacket in the other. The sun is still out, so it's bearable to be only in a shirt, but it's going to get colder later in the evening, even if he knows they're going to be working up a sweat.
Not yet,
Steve answers, and walks off the bus to greet him, ignoring the outraged spluttering coming from the kids in general, and Henderson in particular. Billy glances at his wristwatch.
We have time.
Yeah, Steve says, smiling.
We do.
There is enough time to walk the kids through the whole reliving the same day over and over again thing. Billy knows this from experience, because he and Steve have done it several times already. But today, they don't. One reason is that Steve gets visibly upset when he has to explain to the Henderson kid that actually, he's been reliving this day thousands of times already, and no, not even dying helps because he's tried it. Downright depressing, that. Especially with the kids listening in. Billy refuses to think about the fact that this is a fate that is probably awaiting him, too. To spend eternity in Hawkins, reliving this goddamn day until he goes insane. At least he's pretty sure that's what's going to happen eventually, as he has died four times already and still wakes up in his room on the same morning, every damn time. The other reason is that Billy is eager to continue where he and Steve left off yesterday. And they don't actually have that big of a window to get things done in if they want to keep the kids safe. Which Steve insists on doing every day. Billy once, a bit shaken and high-strung after his first death, mentioned that they should just let the little shits kill themselves, because it wasn't like they wouldn't still be there the next day anyway. Steve had gone silent and not talked to him for the remainder of the day, which was enough to make Billy regret his words. He figured that Steve had probably had to watch the kids die a couple of times already. And when Billy thought about having to watch Max die, yeah, he kind of got it. Coincidentally, the next day, Max had gotten a little too close to getting eaten, and Billy had jumped in front of her and caught some claws to the abdomen that hurt like a bitch. Steve had seemed appreciative, though, and Max didn't die, so he guessed that it was worth it. It wasn't like he had time to die from the infection, anyway. The reset was always at 6:24 a.m. on November 5th. He did suggest, though, that they should simply lock the kids up somewhere to keep them safe. They even tried it once. It had almost worked, too, until they found that the brats had gotten out somehow and were halfway to the lab by then with a homemade flamethrower. Now, instead of diving headfirst into the whole time loop mess, they go with the version that will yield the least amount of questions. Some bullshit story about Billy having known about the Upside Down since back in California, and that he and Steve had bumped into each other while patrolling at night, and exchanged stories and knowledge. It takes about 10 minutes, and a promise to get into detail about the California monsters later. A later that never comes. Before they can leave the kids to their own devices in the bus, under the guise of checking out the perimeter, and make the trek to a little clearing between the old cars for some privacy. Far enough away that they won't get seen, and close enough that they can shout to the kids that they're fine once in a while, so the Brat Pack won't come looking for them. Not for the first time, Billy wishes they were really sneaking off for something else that needs privacy. But alas, that's not the case. What they're doing instead, during this hour or so before they have to make it back to the bus, is spar. Or something like it. See, after the third time that Billy died, he must have been frustrated enough that even Steve noticed. He'd found that nothing ruined his good mood as much as being mauled to death. Because Steve offered to teach him some things that would make fighting the dogs easier. And since Billy hadn't seen Steve die once, while he was already on his third time, he had accepted. So now, they've spent 20 or so afternoons here, with Steve telling him all about the dog's weak spots, and how to get rid of them in the most effective ways. Steve is knowledgeable about these things, and a surprisingly good teacher. Every time Billy shows up with a new weapon, Steve will adapt his lessons accordingly. Because he's had time to try them all during the time he's been stuck in the loop alone. That is partly the reason why Billy chose the axe today. Because they've already gone through the basics of it, and like Steve said the first time, with a little shrug of his shoulders, you can't really go wrong with the axe, honestly. Not having to dwell on the theory of it, today's lesson is more hands-on training. Which has quickly become Billy's favorite kind of training, and which may or may not have also been what he was going for with his pick of weapon for the day. It's hard to practice fighting monster dogs when the monster dogs haven't actually shown up yet. Even though they get some real practice in almost every loop. But as Steve puts it, it's never a bad idea to work on one's reflexes and strength. The nature of their current predicament means they can't build any more muscle, since they reset as themselves every day. Hence why every day is cheat day. But reflexes are partly mental, Steve explains, and will be honed with practice. He must be right, because Billy has yet to beat him once when they spar. It's frustrating and thrilling in equal measures. Thrilling, because it's Steve, and they get real up close and personal, and Billy gets to touch and be touched, even though it's not quite in the way he wants. And frustrating, because even when he tries his hardest, he just can't beat Steve. When he ends up on his back on the hard ground, with a grinning Steve straddling him and holding his wrists down on either side of his head, again, he spares a second to appreciate the position they're in, before replying to Steve's, "Do you yield?" with a huffy, yeah, I yield. Steve rolls off him, still grinning, and shuffles up against one of the cars where he gets comfortable with his back to the car door, and reaches into Billy's discarded jacket pocket for his pack of smokes. Billy lets him. The pack is almost full, and even if they smoke them all, it'll be full again when he wakes up tomorrow. He gets up and walks over to Steve. Sits down next to him and holds out his hand, wordlessly, until Steve puts a lit cigarette in his hand. He takes a drag and looks out over the darkening junkyard. "Were you humoring me before?" Steve makes an inquisitive noise next to him. "You always beat me," Billy says, and motions at the spot where he found himself pinned a minute ago. "Yet somehow, the night before this whole thing started for me, you let me beat you up until you grabbed that plate. Why?" Steve opens his mouth to reply, but Billy turns and fixes him with a glare. "And don't try to bullshit me. I know you could have knocked me on my ass in a heartbeat." It stings to admit, but it's true. And Steve winces. Sucks down the smoke of his cigarette as if he's getting paid to do it, in an obvious attempt to stall. Billy didn't think that Steve smoked before this whole thing started. But in Steve's words, "It's not like I'll get lung cancer and die in one day." "I was tired. It didn't matter. Nothing mattered. And besides, she'd beat me unconscious a lot of times before then. It wasn't like it was the first time." Billy makes a face. "Sorry." Because even though he doesn't remember those times, Steve does. "Don't apologize," Steve says. And it looks like it pains him. He adds in a lower voice, "You're not the one who should apologize." "What was that?" Steve doesn't reply, but he looks guilty. The whole thing is suspicious. "Steve." Steve glances up, but doesn't meet his eye.
"What are you saying?"
I killed you. Billy blinks. That came out of left field.
"What?"
Steve takes a deep breath, licks his lips, repeats, "I snapped and I killed you. That time with the plate." He refuses to look at Billy by his side. "I didn't think. I just grabbed it and hit you. You died on the floor in Mrs. Byers' kitchen." It's not often that someone confesses to your murder. So Billy is quiet for a while, processing. Then he clears his throat and says,
"Yeah, well, at least it didn't take."
His attempt at lightening the mood is unsuccessful. Instead of smiling, the corners of Steve's mouth turn down, making him look deeply unhappy.
"You don't get it."
"Okay," Billy says, drawing the word out.
"What is it I don't get?"
"I killed you."
"Yeah, you said that. And I'm still here."
He motions to his own chest, in case Steve has somehow missed the fact that he is sitting next to him, very much alive.
"No,"
Steve says, and finally turns to look Billy in the eye.
He emphasizes every word when he continues. I killed you. And then you woke up the next morning just like me. Stuck here. Billy sits up straight. Because Steve can't be saying what he thinks he's saying, right? Steve continues. I've never killed anyone before in the loop. I've seen people die for sure, lots of times. I've seen people get eaten by demodogs, torn apart, shot, run over, you name it. And I've killed myself more times than I can count. But I've never killed anyone else. Not until that time. Billy wets his lips. So, I can't be sure, but I've been alone in this thing for, I don't even know how long. Thousands of loops. 10,000. More. I don't know. And then the one time I kill someone, that person ends up in here with me? He looks down at the ground. Digs a finger into the dirt. Seems to me that if anyone should apologize here, it's me. Since it's my fault you ended up here. Taking a deep breath, Billy mulls it over. He can't say that the time loop thing is affecting him too much yet, what with him having only gone through 50 or so loops. But he imagines it must be different for Steve, who has been alone in it for so long. He tries not to think about the future, of the never-ending loops he will have to go through, again and again and again and again. When he does allow himself to think about it, he feels cold all over. But still. It wasn't your fault. I killed you, Billy looks into Steve's face, puts his hands on his shoulders so he doesn't turn away. Did you know what would happen? A slight hesitation before Steve slumps and answers, No. Billy frowns. What was that hesitation about? What was that? What was what? There's something you're not saying. Steve swallows, but doesn't deny it. Billy waits him out. Even though they haven't actually known each other for that long, all things considered, he knows that he's not going to get Steve to open up by pushing him. And he is rewarded when Steve sighs and rubs a hand over his forehead before he confesses. You kind of killed me too. Something cold washes over Billy as the words sink in. He lets his hand drop from Steve's shoulder. What? The first time, when I first woke up in the loop, it was after you hit me over the head with a plate. You were faster than me then. I wasn't used to fighting. But I cornered you in the kitchen and you grabbed that damn plate. And he cuts himself off, biting his lip. He doesn't need to continue. Billy understands. So I killed you. The words feel foreign on his tongue. And then you woke up in the loop. Yeah. And then you killed me, and I woke up in the loop. Got it in one. Did you know? Now Billy is the one looking away. Did you know that this would happen when you killed me? That has Steve turned to him, hands up and eyes wide. No, Billy, you have to believe me. I had no idea. I didn't think about it. I felt so bad for killing you. I was so goddamn relieved when you showed up the next loop and you weren't gone. But then you went off script and I figured out you were stuck in the loop with me and I...
He's pulling at his hair at this point, but there's desperation in his voice. He's desperate for Billy to believe him.
I was so relieved, but I also never wanted this for you, for anyone else. I worked it out after it had already happened, and I can't undo it.
There are actual tears in his eyes now, and Billy's heart aches for both of them.
I can't undo it.
Billy hates seeing him like this. So he says the only thing he can.
So it was my fault.
That makes Steve falter.
Huh? I smashed that plate over your head in the first place, killing you, making you wake up in the loop. It's my fault.
No. No, Billy, that's not what I'm saying at all. You didn't know. It's exactly what Billy hoped he would say. And he jumps on it. And neither did you.
I...
Steve cocks his head to the side with a frown between his eyes.
What? You didn't know this would happen, and I sure as hell didn't know it would happen, so it's not our fault. Either of us. If anything, it's the universe or this goddamn town fucking with us.
Steve slumps back against the car and sighs deeply.
I hate the universe.
He picks up his forgotten cigarette butt and relights it. Billy holds his hand out for the lighter and copies him.
Understandable,
Billy says.
And I hate this town.
They sit there in silence for a while, smoking. The silence is not uncomfortable, but Billy still finds himself speaking again when he has smoked a cigarette down to the filter.
So, anything else you want to get off your chest?
That makes Steve laugh.
Other than murder and a whole bunch of suicides?
Billy grins.
Yeah, that's depressing. I want the fun stuff. I mean, you must have done some fucked up shit during your time in here. You can't tell me you've been babysitting these brats for thousands of loops without going ham and, like, robbing a bank at least once.
Steve laughs again.
The sound alone is enough to loosen the tension in Billy's shoulders. Oh, I've robbed the bank for sure. Never successfully, but I bet we could do it if we work together.
Steve glances up at him.
Yeah? Yeah. I mean, you need to have someone to drive the getaway car. And people always tell me I drive the Camaro like I stole it.
He is rewarded with yet another laugh, which warms his heart and makes his cheeks feel hot.
Luckily, it's starting to get dark, so he hopes Steve can't tell.
Seriously, though, you must know this town inside out by now. Give me the gossip. Something occurs to him.
You must have hooked up with so many people!
Steve nods, gravely.
So many people.
Billy gasps, fake scandalized.
You whore! Who?
Steve makes a show out of thinking about it, and then starts ticking names off on his fingers. Melissa, Danielle, Hannah, Tammy, Tina, Carol.
Wait. Tommy's Carol?
Steve is just grinning as he continues.
Mandy, Vicky, Mrs. Daniels at the library.
No!
Nancy, Jonathan.
That has Billy's brain screech to a halt.
Wait, hold up. Jonathan?
Steve just smiles at him.
Well, you get bored with girls after a while.
This is even more insane than time loops and monsters.
You're telling me you've fucked guys?
Fucked, been fucked by.
Shut up! You're fucking with me!
Steve leans in real close,
And with a shit-eating grin on his face, he says, voice a low purr, "Not today." Which implies, of course, that he has before with Billy. The thought is mind-blowing. The thing is, Billy doesn't doubt for a second that it's true. Hell, if Steve had ever made a move on him or hinted at being interested, Billy would have sunk to his knees and thanked him for the opportunity. Suddenly, he feels warm, despite the chill in the air. His mouth opens and closes without any words coming out, and absentmindedly, he thinks that he must resemble a particularly dumb fish. Before he can speak, Steve stands up and brushes the dirt off his pants. He glances at his watch and says, "It's almost fight time. Come on, let's go back to the bus. They'll be here soon." Billy scrambles to his feet and belatedly grabs his axe, which he was close to forgetting. "Wait, Steve, you can't just say something like that and walk away." Steve shoots him a grin over his shoulder. "We're on a deadline. We can talk later." Billy hurries after him and grumbles, "Not if I die." That is met with a challenging raised eyebrow. "Then don't die. You're an asshole. After this, you're telling me everything we ever did in the other loops. You hear me? How about I show you instead?" That renders Billy speechless, and he almost trips over his own 2 feet. He stops and looks at Steve traipsing away between the cars, mouth hanging open. And here he was, debating on how to make the first move toward a kiss. Damn! They can figure out the time loop later. They have something to go on now. It obviously started with either a murder or a plate, or a combination of the two. And if something started it, then surely something can end it, too. There is hope for the two of them to get out of this together. But there's no rush. They have monsters to kill, banks to rob, and apparently, Billy is behind on a lot of things. He can't wait to catch up. Eventually, they'll get out of here. He's sure of it. They'll figure it out together. But in the meantime, they can have some real fun. They have all the time in the world, after all. The end. But I'm scared of breaking my heart. Now I remember, I used to tell you all my deepest fears. When fighting, you used them just to force some tears. Pink skies, just like when we were fine in September. Author's notes. I am obviously a master at coming up with titles. Bow before my skills. Reader's notes. This podfic was recorded as a treat for Summer Podfic Swap 2023 for Rose's Zane, because you recorded for me Trash Panda Billy in a Burrito, and I have had this song, the intro-outro music, as part of my very specific, very short Steve Harrington in a Time Loop playlist. And I've been looking for an excuse to use this particular bit of loopiness since Eurovision 2023. Thank you so much to Rosa Zane, because the gift you gave me was absolutely delightful, and it is the night before treats close, and the AO3 is down, so obviously that was the kick in the pants to record the thing as a thank you. And to everyone else, I hope it made you smile. I liked this sort of, I have not yet reached the futility, and also, if there are no consequences, it's very Jack O'Neill playing golf through the wormhole of Billy to, you know, be plotting that kind of thing.
And yeah, thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Thank you to Dave for having blanket permission to podfic. Have a nice day. I'm scared of breaking.